Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, ARMOIRE, .style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. On September 16th, 2019, 5-year-old Dulce Maria Alaves was playing in a park in her hometown of Bridgeton, New Jersey. She was with her 3-year-old brother, and her mother, Noema, was in the car nearby. But the children got out of Noema's sight. And soon, Dulce Maria's little brother, Manuel, came to tell his mom that he couldn't find his sister. Now, nearly 2 years later, the town, the state, and the country are still searching for little Dulce Maria Alabez. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell the story of Dulce Maria Alabez. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
So this is part two of our story on little Dulce Maria Alabez.
Yes.
And for those of you who haven't heard part one, obviously stop this and listen to part one, because that's where we talk about the circumstances of her disappearance, kind of get into her background a little bit, and talk about the immediate investigation. But unfortunately, like all of the cases we cover, this one remains unsolved. And so the investigation has been going on for nearly 2 years now.
Right.
And so this week we're going to talk about the investigation in its later months, basically.
And the letters, right?
The letters.
Yes. Yeah, where we left off.
That is where we left off last week, with three mysterious letters being sent to various businesses in Ohio.
We have to stop with these cliffhangers.
I know. I know.
It's
I can't help
me.
It.
I can't imagine how the listeners feel.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. But yeah, this one just, there's so much going on. Like I was trying to wrap it up and then we got to these letters and I just couldn't. And it was way too much for one episode. So we needed to go into two. But before we get started with part two, I would like to bring up again that next week we are celebrating our 1 year anniversary of the show.
Yay.
So thank you to everyone who has been with us since the beginning, who has bared with us through me trying to figure out like how to record a podcast, and Ethan talking.
Yeah, me not knowing what to say on most of these episodes.
Yeah. So thank you very much. And for those of you who haven't been with us since the beginning, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Like the first couple episodes are rough. And because of that, we are actually going to release a re-recorded version of our very first episode, which is Victor J.R. Shoemaker. Now, as you know, I write these episodes, I do the research, and Ethan does not know about the case before we record.
Right.
Obviously, he knows about this one because we've already talked about it. But it was his first episode and, he was a little nervous. He had never podcasted before. So, everything that he says is not scripted. So this isn't going to be the same exact episode.
No. And I also have a terrible memory and can't remember anything about what I said on the podcast. So.
Yeah. I mean, you can't remember things from 20 minutes ago. So this is basically going to be all new for you.
All right, what are we doing again?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, so we are going to do that. And so even if you did hear the original episode, it will be kind of new, something a little bit different. And again, this is a local case for us, which is why we covered that as our very first episode. And it's one of the main reasons why I wanted to start this podcast. So this one's very important to me, and it doesn't get covered very much at all. And so any new ears that we can get on this and, get to listen and share JR's story, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. So look out for next week where we have Victor J.R. Shoemaker, Taylor's version. Do you get it? Because she re-recorded all of her songs from the... Yeah. Okay. All right. Now let's get into the case of Dulce Maria Alabez. We left off last week at the end of 2019. There are no new leads in her case and no new answers, despite a reward of $75,000 in this case, which is huge. I mean, a lot of these cases do not get that kind of reward, but unfortunately, it didn't bring any solid leads. At this point, the Bridgeton Police, the County Prosecutor's Office, the New Jersey State Police, and the FBI were all working on this case, trying to find little Dulce Maria. But in 2020, we still had no new leads and no answers. And then in March of 2020, you know, a few things happened.
Maybe a small thing.
A small global pandemic occurred. And three letters showed up in Ohio. Authorities in Austintown, Ohio were investigating a letter mailed to a local library and an index card mailed to a casino regarding Dulce Maria. They searched around the casino but turned up nothing. Then, authorities in Wethersfield Township, Ohio, about 6 miles away from Austintown, received a similar index card. All three letters appear to have been written by the same person, just based on the handwriting. But the card in Wethersfield Township had different information than the ones sent to Austintown. The first letter that was delivered to the library was about 2 pages long and apparently only contained publicly available information about this case. However, the index card referenced information specific to Austintown, which is what prompted the search of a 30 to 40 acre wooded area surrounding the casino. It read in part, quote, 76 Truck Stop Dead End Street Entrance Woods. Please look, end quote. Which, like, just sounds incredibly creepy.
Yeah, to me, that sounds like somebody that picked up on the case and is a mental health consumer and is probably reaching out for attention in some way. This does happen in a lot of cases, a lot of criminal cases specifically, where you have people do this thinking that they have some sort of knowledge of the case and they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because it misguides police. That index card you said had specific information about the town. Does it have anything unknown or not public knowledge about Dulce?
It doesn't sound like it, no. It just sounds like that, you know, like the look here, you know.
Yeah.
And police did look there. They didn't just perform a foot search either. They brought in dogs, drones, and infrared.
Yeah, and see, this is part of the problem. You have to investigate that.
You have to, yeah.
But the unfortunate thing is it's probably somebody who has mental health issues and does things like this based on whatever their mental status is at the time. They think they have knowledge of this case, and they don't.
Right. Unsurprisingly, the search turned up nothing. Police did say that, you know, the ground was still frozen at the time, which did hinder the dog's capabilities.
Yeah.
And they did want to research, you know, after the ground was thawed a little bit. But again, this was a while ago, so I'm thinking nothing came of it. But that wasn't the end of the letters. Jackie Rodriguez, who had been acting as the Alavez family spokesperson, said that she received mail, too, at her P.O. box. 7 slips of paper scribbled with random phrases, but nothing specifically about Dulce. According to NJ.com, she could make out some words, including Alaska, Mexico, border, 1776, Civil War, New England town, and kids' homes orphanage. And to your point, to Jackie, the content of the notes, as disjointed as it was, did seem somewhat familiar to her. So to her, it seemed a lot like the messages she had been receiving from so-called psychics on social media.
There we go.
Yeah. Jackie, at the time, was running the Find Dulce Maria page and would get tips from psychics constantly, telling her where to look. But regardless of the intentions of the sender, she was not pleased with receiving mail like this. And this was her P.O. box and not her home. But she still told reporters, quote, it's scary because now it's near my family.
Right.
End quote. Yeah. I just, ugh.
Unfortunately, that's the world in which we live. This happens in a lot of cases that garner public attention.
Mm-hmm.
Just is what it is. It sucks.
Yeah.
And it makes everybody feel uncomfortable.
Right.
And it
and it wastes resources. It wastes time. It's awful. So I don't want to spend too much on these letters because unfortunately I don't think that they have a lot of insight into what happened to Dulce Maria. But I do have to like talk about this next part.
Okay.
And this is a total coincidence. And I know you say that you don't believe in coincidences, but this is a coincidence. And I think you'll agree with me, but it still like really gave me chills as I was reading it. So if you'll recall, if you're a regular listener, we brought you the story of Sofia Juarez a few weeks ago. She was another little girl who went missing. She was also Hispanic. Her mother was also a single mother who gave birth to her when she was a teenager. And she went missing right before her fifth birthday. But Sofia went missing in 2003 and was from Washington State, clear on the other side of the country. So, you know, again, it's not like they were in the same neighborhood or anything like that. But this is the creepy part. In that case, there was a TikTok video that emerged of a woman in Culiacan, Mexico. She claimed to have been kidnapped, and authorities were wondering if she could be Sofia. So that index card that I mentioned that was sent to the casino, there was a return address. And the address itself was illegible, but the zip code was Culiacan, Mexico.
Okay.
That's so weird.
It is. When did that TikTok video go viral?
It was after this. So that TikTok video just went viral a few months ago, and these letters happened before that. So no, it has nothing to do with the TikTok video. It's creepy.
Okay.
And again, I do think it's a total coincidence. And, you know, we just happen to have just covered Sofia's case. But I had never, and listen, I'm not like an expert on Mexico by any means. I had never heard of Culiacan, Mexico before like 3 weeks ago or a month ago, whenever I was writing that episode. And now to have it show up in two cases so closely.
That is weird, yeah.
It's so weird. And police have no idea if the card actually originated in Culiacan. There was no postmark. There was, however, a postmark on the letter mailed to the Austin Town Library, and that postmark was in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. The one search of the woods is the only one that police ended up conducting based on these creepy-ass letters, and police and family, of course, fear that it's just all a big hoax. But police did say that if it is, and they find out who the sender is, like, they are definitely prosecuting them for whatever they can. And again, going back to the Sofia Juarez case, like that guy who got prosecuted for telephone harassment, like they will find something.
Oh, yeah. And look, you send something through the mail. Look, postal inspectors, they're just waiting around for cases.
Oh, yeah. They've got to be incredibly bored. So like,
I don't know whether they're incredibly bored.
I feel it's
bored,
mostly like people like sending drugs through the mail. So like be a little bit more interesting.
But you bet your ass they're going to be all over it.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, so heads up to that person. Yeah,
now you're talking federal indictment, too.
Yeah. Investigators, of course, are getting frustrated because this isn't the only potential hoax or false information that was going around in this case. In October of 2020, a post that made the rounds of social media said that Dulce Maria had been found dead. County prosecutor Jennifer Webb McRae had to get online and assure everyone that this was false. She said, quote, "Information like this is a distraction to the investigation and causes unnecessary grief to the family of missing child Dulce Maria Alavez," end quote.
Yeah, which is so fucked up. And
yeah,
we recently retweeted somebody's daughter went missing and he was a Twitch.
Yeah.
Twitch? Is that what it is? Like, I was following it on Twitter, and, you know, he was posting updates constantly, and some sick fuck made some YouTube video saying that they found video footage of his daughter drowning or some
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I missed that.
She came home.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So yeah. She's safe. So I did know safe, that. Like, she's like, back home. She's safe. But yeah.
What the fuck?
Oh, yeah. No,
what
I know.
What is wrong with people?
Yeah, the one thing.
This is why I hate the internet. I mean, God, I want to just get off of all social media. And if it weren't for this podcast, I would be. Like, I'm so done with all this.
Yeah, like the one thing I didn't expect when we started this podcast was to find out how often this happens in missing persons cases. Like you just mentioned, the families who have already been through the worst thing imaginable then have to deal with hoaxes or identity thieves or scammers. And it's just, it's absolutely disgusting. Like, I just can't understand. And it's shocking to me that how often in these cases, when I'm researching them, it's like, oh yeah. And then this guy was arrested for stealing the identity of the missing person. And then that guy tried to bribe the family. Like, it's ridiculous.
I just want to go hide in the woods.
Then in another stressful incident that wasn't a hoax or anything like that, but certainly didn't help, in April of this year, 2021, on Dulce Maria's 7th birthday, a video of her popped up on YouTube. Now again, like, so yeah, you've got to be thinking like, oh my gosh. And no one knew who posted it at first. And some people started scrambling, like thinking like, oh my God, she's alive. Like, she's out there somewhere. But it turns out that it was just posted by her father, who's still in Mexico, as a birthday tribute. And the footage was just like old video that he had of the two of them together. You know, obviously, this did bring the father back into the picture in terms of like the suspect list. And so I don't think local police spoke to him right away, but apparently the FBI did. And they're like, hey, buddy. Like,
well, yeah. I mean, it's a child abduction case, so the FBI would be involved.
Exactly. And they are. They have been involved since the beginning, basically.
Yeah. And they would have the jurisdiction to and the resources to venture down.
Yeah. And I don't know if they like physically went down there, whatever it was, but the FBI did speak to him and was like, hey, what is this video? Like, you need to give us more details. And so this did bring him more into question because then people are like, wait a second, why is he posting this? Blah, blah, blah. And so then he came out and said like, listen, I got deported when she was 3, but whenever, like, I tried to have as much contact with her as possible, but there were never any issues with her mother, with visitation, with any of that. He said, when I was in New Jersey, I could see her whenever I wanted. Mm. You know, like there wasn't a custody thing, because that is something that came up very early on where there were rumors of like, oh, there's a custody issue. And he's like, no, there absolutely was not a custody issue. Like, I did end up getting deported. I haven't been able to see her, but I had nothing to do with her disappearance, you know. Whatever. Around the same time, another new round of criticism toward Noemi started, but this time it came from closer to home. Jackie Rodriguez, the family friend who acted as a spokesperson for them, gave an interview to New Jersey 101.5 in which she said that she distanced herself from the case because, quote, I was sensing a lack of motivation, a lack of emotion, end quote. She criticized the way Noemi portrayed herself, her words, and her actions. She said, quote, unfortunately, I always had to convince Noemi to go in front of the cameras. You have to show your face. You have to fight for your daughter. But it was just so hard all the time to get her to do an interview. I said to myself, why am I putting my face out there for someone who's not even trying to look for her child? End quote.
Okay, but we've said this before. Like, you cannot judge somebody going through such a horrible ordeal, having not been through that yourself.
And also,
even beyond that, you don't know what mental health issues Noemi may have. People react differently to different things. And you said she even said she has a history of depression.
Yeah.
My God, don't you think this is going to pull her deeper into a depression? And didn't you say she was pregnant?
Yeah.
So now we're talking about her being pregnant. Hormones are flooding her system.
Mm-hmm.
and she's depressed because she just lost one of her kids. And further down the line, now you're talking about her having another child. So yeah. Now we're talking about postpartum depression on top of that. Like,
potentially, we don't
potentially,
know.
Potentially, yeah, sure. But like, cut her a fucking break.
Oh, yeah. And also, she was 19 at the time. Don't forget that too.
Yeah.
And also the fact that people started criticizing her 24 hours after she lost her daughter.
Yeah. I just went over the fact that I want to, you know, go hide in the woods.
Yeah.
Based on nothing happening to my family. Like, yeah. Good God.
Jackie herself even admitted in this interview that Noemi is just a shy person in general. There is a language barrier, as I mentioned before, and she feels a ton of guilt for not watching over her daughter more closely.
Right.
There's more to this interview, but like, I honestly don't want to talk about it. Like, it's one of those things that I don't think I could have left out of this story because, you know, whatever, but it's so frustrating to me.
Yeah.
The judgment that this woman has gotten. So anyway, like, if you want to read more about what Jackie has to say, like, it's linked on her blog or whatever, but I don't, it's not that important. By the 1 year anniversary of Dulce Maria's abduction, no new leads had turned up. COVID, of course, put a damper on face-to-face interviews and canvases, but police said that tips did continue to come in and they chased them down to the best of their ability. At that point, all options were still on the table. Police have repeatedly said that no one is completely ruled out in this case, and they won't be until the little girl is found. But they have repeatedly said that the Alavez family has been cooperative throughout this entire ordeal. But the fact of the matter is they don't know if she's in the Bridgeton area, if she's in Mexico, or even if she was targeted specifically. This very well could have been a completely random crime of opportunity, which, you know, you said at the beginning.
I mean, that's just what it sounds like to me.
I'm
sure the police asked for this. I'm sure they know, you know, if this was a part of their frequent schedule.
Right. They're normal. Probably not.
A normal thing that they do every
Tuesday or is a Monday, but whatever, every Monday. Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Or was it just like, we did this one day, you know, and this horrible thing happened, in which case that leads you to believe that it was the park that was targeted and not
her specifically. Yeah.
That's what my thought process would be, or it's complete happenstance. And again, I go back to those maintenance sheds. Mm-hmm. Maintenance workers are in and out of there.
Yeah.
For the park. I'm sure they've looked at the maintenance workers.
I'm sure.
Investigated, but that's one of the big flashing points, especially given the thought that, or the description of a red
van.
Mm-hmm. You know, to me that says somebody that does maintenance of some sort.
I mean, maybe,
you know?
But they're not specific. I mean, I see red minivans all the time. And that's Cumberland true. County Prosecutor Jennifer Webb McGrace said that they ran down every red van or van-like automobile in the area, but didn't find anything of value. She noted that description did come from a child. But despite all the uncertainty, authorities are holding out hope that Dulce Maria is alive somewhere. McGray told ABC 6 News, quote, "In the absence of evidence indicating that Dulce is deceased, we hold out hope that Dulce is alive. I think about her virtually every single day, and the investigators that are working on this case do as well," end quote.
And that is should be
mm-hmm.
the basis of every missing persons case. Until there is a body found, they should not assume that it's a homicide.
Right.
That it is a missing person and that they will be found. And we have seen this time and time again where investigators jump the gun and say, well, it's been 2 days, 3 weeks, whatever. Got to start looking for a body. which cuts out a whole lot of other potential leads that you might run down if you're still looking for a missing person.
Well, and it does, but I think there's a difference between that and doing the two concurrently.
Yes, yeah. Right? Yes, of course. You know, you search the areas that you would expect to find a body.
Yeah.
But you don't exclusively do that while not following up leads that could potentially lead you to them being alive.
Yeah, right. Because, you know, in this case,
you don't also randomly reclassify something as a homicide, which I've also seen.
Yeah. And in this case, like, for instance, they did search that lake nearby immediately, right?
Yeah, sure.
But that didn't mean that they were giving up on anything. It just meant that they were exploring all options, which is what you're supposed to do in a case like this.
So kudos to Bridgeton PD.
And especially because, again, they got outside help immediately, too.
Yeah.
They didn't try to play like, oh, if we need them, I guess we'll ask somebody. Like, they immediately used every resource available to them. And to be fair, it is easier to do that when you're dealing with a 5-year-old child as opposed to an adult.
Right.
I mean, there is the reality of the world. But, you know, I still do want to point that out. Like, they have the county prosecutor's office investigators working on this. They have the state police. They have the FBI. And they have had all of those people working on this from basically the very beginning.
Yeah. Kudos to them. Good job.
Now, in 2021, it's been a year and a half since anyone has seen Dulce Maria Alves, but her family hasn't given up hope, and neither have the Bridgeton police. I mentioned earlier how they understood that the relationship between law enforcement and the city's immigrant community was causing issues in the investigation. Dulce Maria's mother, Noemi, said, quote, "For the community, when everything started, they were scared they were going to get deported because Bridgeton is mostly Mexicans," end quote. Since then, the police have actually taken steps to fix that. In addition to the chief coming out several times and saying that they didn't care about anyone's documentation, the city's police athletic league launched an indoor soccer league to foster trust between the community, children, and the police. More than 40 children are involved in the soccer league, and the program also offers counseling, GED classes, and nutrition courses for parents. Bridgeton police officer Josh Thompson told ABC News, quote, "What we really wanted to do was really go out and extend our hand to let you know that we were really behind you, so we offered up some more programs," end quote. And I know that one of your favorite topics to talk about is community policing.
Yes.
So I'm going to tee this up for you right now.
Oh, God.
According to an article in Aldea, quote, "In 2007, the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C. implemented a new policing strategy to reduce violence by rebuilding the relationship between the police and communities. By having the officers go into the neighborhoods and get to know the people they protect and serve, they gained trust, and the city saw its homicide rate decrease by more than half in the subsequent 5 years," end quote.
Do I get to react now?
Yeah, that was I gave that to you. I like set this whole thing up for you. All right, go.
Fuck. I get so infuriated by this. Community policing is not a fucking new concept. I mean, good God, there was a terrible movie made in the 80s called Police Academy.
Are we talking? This is the second time we've brought up Police Academy on this podcast. Yeah,
I don't remember. Oh my God, Police Academy, Citizens on Patrol. It was the whole thing about community, and it was a terrible comedy, whatever. So I went to college and I studied law enforcement, and this came up in the historical perspectives of law enforcement, community policing. And yes, it was studied in the realm of certain things that went poorly, in particular concentric zone models and things like that outside of Chicago, but we won't get into any of that because that was less community policing and more just driving the crime or the impoverished out of a certain area. Anyway, the reality is that community policing, getting to know the community and protecting the community, not only that you serve, but potentially where you live, which is part of the whole reason why a lot of law enforcement agencies required in the past their police officers to live within the area
Right, in the past, but no longer.
There's the whole thing about retribution, and law enforcement became very scared about police officers getting assaulted at their homes, which is rightfully so, but you can still care about the community that you police.
Yeah.
By becoming a member of that community, not necessarily having to live there, but you can be a member of a community and not live there.
Yeah, you just have to get to know the people. And again, it's about having empathy and about understanding that these are people. And I think a lot of the time, weirdly, that gets overlooked and they just become objects in your job or yes. something.
Yeah. And look, if anybody has, if any law enforcement out there says that I'm crazy, I will point to a story that one of my instructors taught me or told mm-hmm. me about. So he was the first defensive tactics instructor I had when I went through the academy. And years later, I re-encountered him at a different training, and I had the privilege of introducing him as part of this class. And the class that he was giving was talking about respect, giving respect to the community and getting it in return. And he told this story about how he had always treated the members of his community that he was patrolling with respect. And, you know, it was Miami, so, you know, there were definitely times when respect was not given one way or the other. However, he always felt it was important to treat people fairly. So fast forward years later in his career, he's on a bike unit, a motorbike unit, and he was running a speed trap at some corner. And it was one of the speed traps where he would just do frequently. Somebody in that neighborhood knew him from an interaction that he'd had before. And he came out and told this guy, he said, "Hey, look, everybody knows that you run speed traps here on this certain day of the week."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You've always treated me with respect and you did me right before. So I'm going to do you a solid. There's a hit out on you. And these people are coming to get you right now. So leave."
Oh.
Yeah. And he left. Because he was like,
"Okay, bye.
Holy shit." Yeah. But the point being, he had always treated, even though he had arrested this guy.
Yeah.
But he treated him with respect. And he gave him a fair shake, did whatever he could for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came back around.
Yeah.
And that's the point of community. You don't go in there and be a dick and give speeding tickets to everybody. You don't go in there and like
hassle people
when it's not necessary. You treat people with respect. You treat the community as though it's your community
and get to know them.
And you will get information. You will get help mm-hmm. when you need it. Because guess what? Your backup is not always going to be there. But if you have the backup of the local community, you're going to be safe. Safer.
Yeah.
Thanks. This is the second episode where you've gotten me on a rant about law enforcement.
Well, yeah, but this is, I feel like, a rant that you like love giving. Well,
yes, I do, because it's something that is truly missing from law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen it on every level, state, local, federal. Law enforcement, cops get so caught up with the job being their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that identity has to fit into a certain mold. And it's fostered by the old heads in the department continuing to just breed that into the new people, as opposed to the new people saying, "Wait, I don't have to do this. And yeah, I'm a cop, but that's my job. It's not my identity. Like, I can go home and have my own life. How I approach things on the job doesn't have to be, I'm a cop." That's hard to break. It's the cycle that exists in American law enforcement that just shouldn't be there. It's not us versus them.
Right.
And that's what it is. That's what is bred into you, even in training. It's us versus them.
Mm-hmm.
And
a healthy dose of toxic masculinity.
Oh, well, yeah. Very heavy dose of that.
Yeah.
But the reality is that the us is the people that you're protecting. It's much more so than your fellow officers, especially if you're out on the beat. Like your backup may not be there for fuck. If you're a state trooper in Pennsylvania or somewhere in the middle of the state, your backup might not be there for a half an hour. You're gonna have to rely on non-law enforcement help. And if you're a dick to these people,
they're not gonna help you. Yeah.
So get to know your community, because they might save your life. All right, I'm done.
Okay. So back to Bridgeton. So they created this like soccer league and just basically, you know, as a way to do community outreach. And they understand, I think, that a soccer league isn't going to heal all wounds.
No, but it's a step in the right direction.
Well, exactly. And it's heartening to see a local police department making an active effort to build bridges within their community.
Yeah.
Instead of just blaming them for like not coming forward and things like that, you know?
Cindy Song, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Dulce Maria Alves is a little girl who needs to come home. And my hope is that someone out there who has any information, no matter how insignificant, will say something. So please actually stay tuned. I know a lot of people like don't necessarily listen to the end of the episodes, but like after the song plays, that's when I give all the information about how to report something. So please listen to it. And we will give different ways that you can connect and give information about this case if you have it. Dulce Maria has been missing for nearly 2 years, but there is still hope. As her mother, Noemi, said, she is grateful that people are still remembering her little girl. Quote, they're not like giving up on her. They keep sharing her posts. And there's even a tree in the park about her. So every time kids or adults go there, they see her tree and there's a picture of her there. End quote. Dulce Maria Alves has been missing from Bridgeton, New Jersey since September 16, 2019. She was 3'5" and between 60 and 70 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She was wearing a yellow t-shirt with an elephant and black and white checked pants with flowers. She was 5 years old when she disappeared. She would be 7 today. If you have any information on Dulce Maria Alves' disappearance, please call the New Jersey State Police Missing Persons Unit at 609-882-2000, extension 2554, or the Bridgeton Police Department at 856-451-0033. You can also call the FBI's toll-free tip line at 1-800-CALL-FBI and select option 4, then select option 8, or submit an anonymous tip to the agency online. Spanish speakers can call 856-207-2732. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at @ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And just a quick note, we are at 93 reviews right now on Apple Podcast. So if you want to get us to like a cool 100, we would love that. But in the meantime, we will see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.